For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The president of Spain's Football Federation has been arrested as part of a corruption investigation along with his son. Spanish media report they were detained on suspicion of embezzling funds in relation to a probe into claims of falsification of documents and skimming profits from international football matches. Ángel María Villalona has been president of the association since 1988 and is a former international footballer. As Republicans in the US Congress battle to repeal and replace Obamacare, two senators from the party have come out against the Trump administration's healthcare bill, effectively killing it. In a tweet, Senator Mike Lee says he and his colleague Senator Jerry Moran do not support the proposals, as Giles Gibson reports.
Republicans hold 52 out of the 100 seats in the US Senate, meaning Senators Lee and Moran's public move against the current version of the legislation puts President Trump's healthcare reform plans in serious trouble. President Trump made repealing and replacing Barack Obama's signature healthcare bill a central pillar of his 2016 campaign. And on Twitter on Monday evening local time, he reacted strongly in the wake of the two senators' comments, saying Republicans should repeal Obamacare now and replace it later.
The Indian government says it will not give Indians another chance to deposit old notes after it banned the two highest value banknotes in November to crack down on illegal money flows. The Supreme Court had been pushing New Delhi to give Indian citizens another chance to deposit the notes. Rebecca Bunden reports.
The Indian government has told the Supreme Court that allowing another opportunity for depositing demonetized notes would defeat the purpose of demonetization. In November, the Indian government suddenly banned the two highest value 500 rupee and 1000 rupee banknotes. The ban left many Indians struggling to return their old notes in time. The Supreme Court had argued that authorities should not let a person's genuine hard-earned money go to waste.
The Australian Greens Party will urgently review its processes after losing two senators in less than a week over confusion about their citizenship. Senator Larissa Waters has now joined fellow deputy leader Scott Ludlam in announcing her resignation from Parliament. Arthur Stevens reports.
Queensland Senator Larissa Waters was born in Canada to Australian parents, but left when she was 11 months old and has never returned. She was under the impression she had until the age of 21 to choose to be a Canadian, only to discover last week she'd been a dual citizen from birth and had to actively renounce her Canadian citizenship. That rules her ineligible to stand for election under Section 44 of the Australian Constitution. It's the same section that called out Scott Ludlam, who stood down late last week after finding out he held dual citizenship with New Zealand.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett, and a warm welcome to Tuesday's programme to you. Warm in the UK, although it's going to change overnight. Very warm today around the whole country. Thunderstorms on the way, though. Weather warnings issued. It is July 18th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you've had a great day. Welcome to your Richie Allen Show.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Live on davidicke.com on Fab Radio 2. Tune in radio as well as richieallen.co.uk. A warm welcome to you, as I already said. Lots to get through in the next couple of hours. The activist mommy, a.k.a. Elizabeth Johnston, joins the programme this hour. Spoke with Elizabeth a bit earlier on. Lovely lady. She put a video out in the last few days that has gone viral, urging people to boycott, indeed to burn, Teen Vogue magazine. Now, her video has been seen by millions of people. The magazine recently published an article entitled Anal Sex, What You Need to Know. And the June-July edition of the magazine also featured articles teaching children how to masturbate, articles on homosexual sex and gender fluidity. Don't miss Elizabeth, she joins us this hour. And the great Dean Henderson returns to the programme. Last On with us back in early February. Great to have Dean back, a great author and a geopolitical commentator. We'll be talking about French President Emmanuel Macron, who has dangerously claimed, in my opinion, not that it's anything new, they're all at it now, that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. More with Dean Henderson in the second hour. As usual, if you'd like to contribute to the programme by telling me what you think, you can do that through Twitter, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, or you can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Huge thanks to Leroy Gill from Barbados for emailing the programme. Leroy, thanks for your lovely email. Thanks for listening to the show. And a big shout out to Alan Britton and Shirley, long-time listeners and supporters of the programme. Alan was listening with great interest to Peter Robbins on the programme last night, and it struck a chord with Alan, because the experiences that Peter was describing, these abduction experiences, those experiences very familiar to Alan, and he sent me a lovely email on that. Thank you, Alan. Do you know what we might do, Alan? We might get into that on the programme real soon. I might ask for listeners to phone in with their experiences, and I might kick it off with you if you're up for that. Right, 6 minutes past the hour. Lots to tell you about before we introduce our first guest, as there always is. Now, the Advertising Standards Authority has published a major review into ads that feature stereotypical gender roles. The report concluded, wait for it, that ads that encourage gender discrimination or reinforce gender roles have the potential to cause harm by inviting assumptions about adults and children that might negatively restrict how they see themselves and how others see them. As a result, strict new rules are on the way for ads, for advertisements on UK television channels. New rules. New rules. What it means is that from next year, 2018, the new guidelines, which will be finalised by the Committee of Advertising Practice, will be enforced to ban what are deemed as inappropriate adverts. However, the Advertising Standards Authority said not all stereotypes would be barred, and that adverts showing a woman cleaning or a man doing DIY would be deemed acceptable. Thank God for that. However, there are a number of instances when a tougher line will be taken. The ASA said these include an ad that depicts family members creating a mess while a woman has to clean it up, and any ad that suggests an activity is inappropriate for a girl because it is stereotypically associated with boys, or vice versa. The review, which claims to address the portrayal of women in ads in particular, comes after a poster for Protein World led to controversy 2 years ago. The ad for Protein World, which promoted a slimming product aimed at women, stated, "Are you beach body ready?" and featured an image of a toned woman wearing a bikini. What is this? Well, I suppose it's all too easy, and sadly, sometimes when it's all too easy, it's because it's appropriate to say that this is liberal, lefty, lunatic, PC nonsense, but with very sinister undertones. Now, Ella Whelan is the assistant editor of Spiked Online, and you might be glad to know Ella Whelan is not at all impressed. Here she is on Sky News Today.
I'm not excited by this. I think, like most women, actually, I'm really quite sick of the idea that we need to have adverts regulated and shown in a certain light. Or the idea simply that women take their cue from how to act in society or in their family life or with their children or how to raise their children, that comes and is formed by advertising. That's just completely ridiculous. What's infinitely more insulting than any kind of ridiculous advert is the idea that women need to have regulation that insinuates that they need to be protected from certain portrayals of themselves, that a woman viewing a woman doing housework or raising their child in a certain way would harm them. I think the use of the word harm here is actually really shocking. I think most women, and myself included, just find this extremely insulting.
Very good stuff, and brilliantly said by Ella Whelan there. Surely it's madness that a girl, a young woman, a teenage woman, a 20-something woman, might be influenced into thinking they are somehow limited to what they can do, all because there is an ad on TV with a woman singing with a Hoover while putting Shake and Vac product on the carpet. Nonsense. Ella Whelan continues, you know, people say all the time, we get emails all the time saying, sometimes, Richie, you and your guests make mountains out of molehills. We're not. There's something going on here. Ella Whelan continues along the same line as she started.
The problem is that in saying that there's something wrong about these adverts, what you're saying is that women who do lead these kind of lifestyles are doing something wrong. That's one point. The other point is that if you look back in history, back to the kind of adverts you saw in the 50s and 60s, which were, you know, truly, truly sexist, that did not affect the way that women, you know, politically organised and actually changed their situation in society back then. So what is the kind of logic behind the idea that women today who see adverts who are far milder than the ones we've seen in past history would suddenly be cowed by that and be constricted by that? It's completely fantastical, and it's actually insinuating that women are not intelligent enough to make their own life decisions without the influence of advertising.
Absolutely right. And on a deeper level, this is about neutralising gender, the one gender identity agenda. There is an agenda to usher in gender neutrality, or an androgynous gender agenda, if I can say that. Doesn't roll off the tongue, but it is. It's multifaceted. And I'll be talking about this with Elizabeth Johnston shortly. When you talk about these things, of course, the liberal lunatic lefties, the identitarians who identify as socialists, they identify as, you know, we love everything and everybody and everything is okay and, you know, all of that. When nobody is saying there's anything wrong with choosing to live your life the way you want to live it. Nobody is saying that. We'll get into that a bit later on. You know, we've had this all week. You know, why can't James Bond be a woman or be black? Well, it might be because Ian Fleming wrote the character as a white man. Right? Simple. The idea that you're somehow liberating women by deciding to change the James Bond franchise and consider a woman for the role of the next James Bond is laughable. If you want to feature films, movies, blockbusters, whatever, with women secret agents, write a screenplay featuring a woman secret agent. We've had loads of them. Very successful films. Scarlett Johansson has been in some. Hasn't she? I can think of others. Angelina Jolie has been in some. And a very, very good actress whose name escapes me was in one called Columbiana. Is it Zoe Saldana? She was in one as well. This is crazy. And it isn't just harmless fun and silliness. There's something deeper going on. We'll talk about it more this hour. Now, Emmanuel Macron, the French president, called anti-Zionism a new form of anti-Semitism during a strongly worded speech in which he condemned France's historic collaboration with the Nazis. He was speaking in Paris at an event to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the Veldiv Roundup, in which 13,000 French Jews were deported to Nazi concentration camps by the French government in July 1942. Fewer than 100 of those detained ultimately survived. Like recent French presidents, Macron accepted the French state was responsible for the act, which took place under the Vichy regime. Here's what he said, and it's very brief, this, because it is in Francais.
Nous ne céderons rien à l'antisionisme, car il est la forme réinventée de l'antisémitisme.
Told you it was brief. Told you what? I told you it was brief. He said, we will not surrender to anti-Zionism because it is a reinvented form of anti-Semitism. Good Rothschild lackey, good boy, good boy. Fetch, bring daddy slippers, good boy. Going to leave that to later on. Dean Henderson will have more on that in the second hour. Remember George Galloway was on the programme last night talking about Blair and the plans to thwart Brexit? Well, as RT reports, Blair's own poll, this is hilarious, a poll commissioned by Tony Blair says most people are in favour of the UK leaving the EU despite all the propaganda.
But Blair's claims that Brexit should not go ahead come as a poll that he commissioned shows public opinion is mostly in favour of leaving the EU. When asked if Britain should leave the EU, even if there is no deal with Brussels, 56% of respondents said it should. A quarter wanted a deal above anything else, and a fifth said they were unsure. Out of those polled, 75% believe the UK's immigration policy is too open, with just 4% saying it is too closed.
You heard the man. And even if it means leaving without a deal, the public want out anyway. Keep that in mind, as you are subjected to a tidal wave of anti-Brexit propaganda by the UK media in the coming weeks and months. Now, authorities and activists continue to question why Minneapolis police, two Minneapolis police officers who fatally shot an Australian woman last weekend, the weekend just gone, didn't have their body cameras turned on during the incident. Why didn't they? Justine Damond is the woman who was killed. Her fiance is also wondering about the details of how she was shot. Justine called the police to report a suspected sexual assault near her home. Her fiancé said, "We lost the dearest of people and we are desperate for information. Piecing together Justine's last moments before the homicide would be a small comfort as we grieve this tragedy." Also known as Justine Ruschek, she had already taken Damond's last name. Justine Damond shot to death by police officers in Minneapolis at the weekend after she rang them to report a sexual assault. The mayor of Minneapolis, Betsy Hodges, spoke with CNN. Have a listen to this.
What have you, as mayor, been able to find out about this incident?
Well, you know, like everyone, I just share how awful and tragic this is. And as you said, I'm just heartsick. I'm deeply disturbed. And we have a policy in Minneapolis and have for a couple years that if critical incidents like this involving police officers, we have an independent investigation. So the state of Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension is doing the investigation. So to make sure that we respect and that I respect the integrity of that investigation, I don't know more than other people do. They are conducting that investigation and we're doing our best to cooperate with them and I ask that they give as much information as they can.
Psychopaths, low IQ, adrenaline junkies, steroid abusing mad men and mad women. That's who get uniforms and guns in the United States today. Now, you might remember, you might not, those of you who have been with me for, well, since the beginning of this program. 2 years ago, you might remember, I spoke to former Buffalo, New York police officer Carol Horn, who was fired for assaulting her fellow officer. Do you know what she did to warrant getting fired? In case you don't know the story, her colleague was choking a handcuffed man and punching the bejesus out of him in the face to the point he was going to kill the chap, the suspect. Her partner was choking the guy to death. She jumped on him to stop him injuring or killing the man. The other police officer punched her in the face, knocked out one of her teeth. She got fired, a 19-year veteran of the force, and she got no pension either. Now here's Carol Horn speaking to this show 2 years ago about the gang culture of violence in the police. And she said something to me 2 years ago, something staggering, about what the young recruits are encouraged to do when they are training at the police academy. Carol Horn, Richie Allen Show, back in October 2014.
Well, it does happen. And when I say, when you ask me regularly, yes, And, you know, you can see it nowadays that not only is it just punching, but it's also killing. But it happens regularly. Not that I saw it on a regular basis. I mean, I saw it enough. But on the police department, you're pretty much like the three monkeys. You hear, see, and speak no evil. You pretty much are taught in the academy. When I was in the academy, the lieutenant said, if you see officers fighting, and he looked directly at me and said, you get your little foot and you kick too. And I was like kind of startled because I was 20 years old when I started the academy. So, you know, to be that young and not even know yourself, you're like, you know, wow, like they're teaching you to be a gang.
They're teaching you to be a gang. If you see officers fighting, you put your little foot in too. Put the boot in. To hell with the fact your fellow officers are assaulting a member of the public. You put the boot in, girl. That's what you're dealing with. And we've talked about that a lot on this program over the years. 21 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio. I'm going to take a very quick break now. When we come back, more to tell you, and very shortly, you don't want to miss the conversation I'm going to be having with the activist Mommy, who has been blogging and vlogging about Teen Vogue magazine's anal sex article. Elizabeth Johnston joins the programme in a couple of minutes' time. Busy day for her. She's been speaking to everybody. Back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
And it's 22 minutes past the hour. We're going to take some music now. When we come back, Elizabeth Johnston joins me. Keep the tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And it's richie@richieallen.co.uk is the email address. I did it again. I can always do it again. There you go. This is Harry Nielsen. Welcome to the program. Back with Elizabeth Johnston in 2 minutes.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze. And skipping over the ocean like a stone. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. For the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at
Harry Nielsen on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. 25 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the programme. A lot of tweets on this, our first subject. It's an important subject, this. It really is. And I'm glad that we're covering it today. My first guest is a journalist, and she would describe herself as a Christian. Her Facebook page, The Activist Mommy, and Twitter feed has a huge amount of support. And she blogs and writes about a lot of issues, social issues, I suppose, issues that don't often get covered on mainstream media in terms of any serious way these days anyway. Now, she published a video which has been seen by millions of people about Teen Vogue magazine, because in its June-July edition, it published an article encouraging children to experiment with anal sex. Now, a lot of people are interested in this. The article offers detailed suggestions to young girls about anal sex and claims that it's an enjoyable activity that everybody is doing. A lot of people are up in arms about this. Some women's rights advocates have claimed the magazine is minimising the risks and physical harms associated with anal sex. Got a mention in his in the absence of the other side. The editor for Teen Vogue, Philip Picardi, said the backlash to the article is rooted in homophobia. It's also laced in arcane delusion about what it means to be a young person today. They said the article was educational rather than encouraging. Well, our next guest wouldn't agree with that, and I'm going to put my cards on the table as well. I wouldn't agree with it either. Let's welcome to the programme the activist mommy herself, Elizabeth Johnston, who's in New York. Elizabeth, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hi, I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Serious issue, this. I was intrigued. Now, we're a serious programme, so I've obviously emailed Teen Vogue to let them know that we're covering the issue and that if they'd like to provide a spokesperson, either today or sometime in the future. Generally, we don't tend to hear back from people like that. So it's probably going to be you and me. Do you want to respond to Picardi's claims that the backlash, and it's not just you, of course, Elizabeth, there's been a lot of backlash to it. The backlash is rooted in homophobia, he says. What do you say to that?
That's outrageous. That's what people on the left say when they can't actually unravel your arguments. And so they begin to accuse you of hate and they try to attack your character. Nothing could be further from the truth. I love all people, but I don't love all ideas. There are some ideas and actions that are not only wrong, but that are also dangerous. And the CDC, Center for Disease Control, recently stated that sodomy or anal sex is the riskiest sexual behavior for getting and transmitting HIV for men and women. And it's and the CDC also said the vast majority of men who get HIV get it through engaging in anal sex. Now, why in Sam's Hill is Teen Vogue, which markets itself to girls age 11 to 17, why are they teaching them how to sodomize one another?
They say it's educational. He says, again, Elizabeth, I don't pretend to be on the fence here. I understand your concerns and I share some of them and we'll talk about that in a minute. But in the absence of the other side, he says, look, people like Elizabeth Johnston, he would say, people like me, I doubt he's ever heard of me, but people like me, he would say, you're living in cuckoo land because kids are doing what kids are doing, like it or lump it. We're educating them to give them the chance to be safe. That's what he would say. What do you say?
Well, first of all, Philip can say that I'm living in cuckoo land, but I'm the one who's got almost 10 million people who've watched my video because parents worldwide are outraged that Teen Vogue is foisting this progressive, over-sexualized agenda on their children who are supposed to be reading Teen Vogue to get advice on the right lip gloss to wear and favorite movies to watch and maybe how to handle if you're suffering from menstrual cramps. But anal sex? Come on. And I mean, first of all, secondly, why is Philip Picardi, a gay man, even the digital editor for a magazine that is targeted to young girls? Shouldn't we have a female in that place? Wouldn't a female be better suited to be the editor of the digital editor of a magazine, pushing out content toward little girls?
I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting point. I don't know if I entirely go along with that, but I see where you're coming from. I do agree with you that the author of the article is a woman called Gigi Engel. And what's disturbing about it is the liberals, as you'd expect, the lefties, and I don't identify on the right or on the left personally, me, I'm pretty politically neutral, but they say, you know, she's a well-known sex educator. Now, you say she isn't, and to back you up, I've been looking into her background, she isn't a well-known sex educator. So why would you give somebody the remit to go and write an article about that when it isn't an area they specialise in?
Exactly. She's not an educator in any, she's not educated on the subject at all from an academic standpoint. She's a journalist. And so any education that Gigi has gotten on this subject is through sleeping around, honestly. And she seems to like to do that a lot. And if you study her, if you take a look at the things she's written, she really is just a very sensational writer, and is you know, clearly trying to be sensational to get clicks. Look, what Gigi Engel did was incredibly reckless. When she first printed the article, it did not even have information in it on safe sex. If you go to the article right now and scroll down to the bottom of it, you'll see that as a result of the intense pressure and backlash that they received, not from Christian right-wingers, from people on the right and the left, even feminists, liberal feminists, were outraged by this article for different reasons than I am. But then she had to go back in. This author lacks such journalistic integrity that she had to go back in afterwards. And the article says at the bottom, the article has been updated to include the importance of using protection during anal sex. Are you kidding me?
It had to be backdated. Yeah, that's a bit. Yeah. That's extraordinarily reckless. There's no doubt about it. If that's true, that they had to edit the article to include using protection, well, that's untenable, right?
Absolutely. Again, CDC says this is the most dangerous type of sexual behavior for transmitting not only HIV, but bowel incontinence and all types of other STDs. And you're not even, she just made it all sound fun and it feels good. And of course, she's being all hip and trendy with her sensational terms. I don't know what your audience can handle, but butt sex and all of this stuff, you know, trying to be cool, hip and trendy. And sacrificing our children's health, you know, for the sake of clicks and for the sake of seeming cool and for the sake of being sensational. Parents are outraged, and Teen Vogue needs to delete this piece of trash article and demand that Teen Vogue apologize for what they have done.
You know, Elizabeth, I was raised Catholic, but I'm not practicing. I'm a bit agnostic. I don't know what's out there or why we're here, but I'm incredibly respectful of people's beliefs and their views. And I get really cheesed off when people attack somebody's religion as a way to attack their personal views. However, you know, coming up in the media, I know a lot of gay men and women, and I had one of my most important mentors was a gay man who's no longer sadly with us. Now, he was incredibly tolerant of other opinions, to his eternal credit, and would regularly engage with people who came from, you know, Christian conservative backgrounds. But he would always say, Richie, look, if he was listening now, he'd say, I've read Elizabeth Johnson. She's obviously a very intelligent woman. That's what he would say. She's bright, she's intelligent, she's asking some interesting questions. But Richie, she identifies as a Christian conservative, and her views are formed out of her religious beliefs, and they're coloured, and she's not seeing things as clearly and as openly as maybe she should. She's seeing things from a specific point of view. And you know that gay and lesbians will always say that about Christians. Go ahead. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would love to hear what those things are that they believe that I'd love to have that conversation. You know, I believe what I believe because I believe it comports with reason and with science. And what Teen Vogue has just put out to children does not comport with reason and science.
No,
we know that the butthole is not made for the other private. Biology shows us clearly that that the penis and the vagina are what make beautiful sex, the easiest sex, feels good. You don't have to have all of this paraphernalia with you in order to do this. It reproduces these amazing, beautiful, intelligent creations called children as a result. You know, it's all clear. It's all very clear when you look at our design, the way we were created to copulate, to be intimate with one another. One of the things that the feminists were upset with this article was that, you know, the focus in anal sex is on the man's pleasure for the most part. You know, the woman's clitoris is not being stimulated. And hey, look at the diagram in the Teen Vogue article. Look at the diagram and you'll see that it has all of the body parts labeled on the female and the male, which she called a prostate owner and a non-prostate owner, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm going to say something, Elizabeth. It's a disgraceful article. And you're absolutely right to draw attention to it. And it has horrified people who've read it. It's really important. I'm just going to jump in here, not to play the devil's advocate, but just to say, while I agree with everything you've said about the article, consenting adults, I know consenting adults who would argue and say, no, anal sex is, you know, a pleasurable part of what we do together intimately and privately. We don't advertise that fact. We're as private about our sex lives as anybody else is. But I know people would take issue with that. So I just want to make that point. Listen,
that's not what this is about. This is about...
No, I know that. I know that. Yeah, yeah.
And hey, I want you to think about this. If you, right now, were to text message the contents of Gigi's article to a 12-year-old, you would lose your job and probably be prosecuted. Do you realize that?
Yes. And can you confirm this? You know, and I absolutely trust you now to give us the absolute straight answer, because you've been completely truthful. I've been looking at this for the last couple of days. You said that kids as young as 12, 13 do buy this magazine. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I mean, this is Teen Vogue. And 12, 13-year-olds are a part of their audience that they're marketing to. And listen, Section 1470 of Title 18 of the U.S. Code, I realize you're not in the U.S., prohibits any individual from knowingly transferring or attempting to transfer obscene matter using the U.S. mail or any means or facility of interstate or foreign commerce to a minor under 16 years of age. The content in this article, for your listeners, go read this article. You will not believe what you are seeing. A man could not text the contents of this article to a 12-year-old without being prosecuted if he got reported.
Yeah, it's basically, it would be considered grooming, wouldn't it, Elizabeth?
It would be grooming. And that is what Gigi Engel and the digital editor, Philip Picardi, have done. They are grooming these children for pedophilia. They are grooming them for homosexuality. And the focus is all on the pleasure of the penis owner. This is an outrage.
Right, I'm going to ask you this, because I'm not a liberal. I'm not. I'm neither a conservative either. I'm not a... I don't know what I am. I sometimes think I'm a realist, and I find out so many times that ideas that I thought were, you know, were logical, I find out that I was wrong, and I'm honest enough to admit that. I don't know what I am. I'm a straight guy. I live with my partner of 15 years, Caroline, and, you know, we know gay people. I have no problems with gay men and lesbian women being gay men and lesbian women. I have no issues with that at all. Let people live how they want to live and let them choose to live their life how they want to live, as long as they don't interfere with how I live my life and vice versa. Now, however, there's an agenda, isn't there? Because what we've seen in recent years is, we've seen this in the UK with the crazy, you know, I mean, this particular edition of this magazine also had articles on gender fluidity. We've seen an attempt to teach or to impose the teaching of, you know, transgender education to very, very young children. We've seen ludicrous politically correct madness over here in the UK where yes. people are saying, if you don't refer to me as they or them because I'm non-binary, I don't identify as male or female, you know, you're abusing me in some way, and that could be actionable later on. I might get into trouble for not saying they. You know, Sheila looks like a woman, so I say she. They say no. We had this nonsense about don't use terms like expectant mother, use terms like expectant person. I think gender is being attacked, and I think the family unit and procreation is being attacked. And I don't say that because I'm a Christian. I say it because it's what I see. What do you think, Elizabeth?
Absolutely. I would agree with that. And this isn't necessarily just a right or left issue or a Christian or non-Christian issue. As you say, we have the pronoun police now, you know, breathing down our throats. And there has been a very strong attempt over the last couple of years, especially thanks to Obergefell versus Hodges here in America, where homosexual marriage was declared legal. We always warned that if you take it to that level, if you allow that to become legal, that that will open Pandora's box to a point that we will never be able to claw back the morality and the clear distinction between male and female. And so there is an attempt to blur all distinctions between male and female that the feminist movement has been hoisting upon us, and the sexual progressives have been foisting upon us. And they are really gaining some ground in that area. And one of my main objectives with what I do with the Activist Mommy is to push back against this insanity. You'll often see my post hashtagged with hashtag gender insanity. I had a video that went viral to 5 million views. That is the title of the video is Gender Insanity. Your listeners can go see that on my Facebook page.
We'll tweet links out. Don't worry about that. I'm going to be tweeting links out to this. You know, we're getting a lot of tweets on this, you know, people saying it's very cruel to take childhood away from children. Why? You know, a teenager might come out, you know, an 18-year-old might come out and say I'm gay, or might say, well, listen, I'm a boy. I'm having feelings that I'm a girl. And, you know, within the family unit, and, you know, a family can talk about that and work that out. And if that child grows up and wants to live like that, fine. But why inflict that on children as young as, not preschool, but as young as grade school, and we would say primary school children here? Who's behind this, Elizabeth? What is behind this, you know, erasing gender? Who's doing it and why, in your opinion?
Oh, my goodness. People that, like I said, want to blur the distinctions between the genders. And you know, now we have in our military, we've got women and men now preparing in our military to be showering with one another. This behavior, again, is very dangerous for women, for children. We want our men to protect us. We want men to protect women and children. And, you know, women that aren't vagina hat wearing, start raving mad, abort Mike Pence feminists marching on Washington still believe in the principles of men protecting women and children. And you know, our men are failing us right now in this country because they are not protecting us. They are not passing laws to protect us. They are not pushing back against the LGBT agenda that is again trying to blur the distinction between the genders, and that wants mixed sexes in bathrooms and locker rooms and dressing rooms. And we're seeing a larger number of cases of sexual abuse and voyeurism in these public places ever since Obama opened up this whole transgender bathroom craziness here.
Do you know, Peter Tatchell, the very famous LGBT rights activist, is a friend of the programs. And I've interviewed Peter many times, and usually, you know, we're talking about human rights issues overseas, but sometimes it's LGBT issues. And I argued, you know, strenuously with Peter about this. Peter Tatchell is a very, very decent guy. He's a kind man. And he said, Richie, you're getting the wrong end of the stick here. This is about kindness. We want people to be kind to people who are different. And I said, it's not that, Peter. You're not, well, maybe he is, but the agenda is not really concerned about kindness, because there are laws, aren't there, Elizabeth, to protect people against, you know, verbal and physical abuse. If somebody is abusing a man who identifies as a woman in any way, there are laws to protect that transgender person. We don't need to be, you know, inflicting this on society in the way that we are. And I'll tell you what's wrong with that from my point of view, mm-hmm. is that the issue hasn't been settled yet on why young boys and young girls, or teenage boys and girls, think they're in the wrong body. And I happen to believe, because of the material I've been lucky enough to read, and I've interviewed some very well-known psychiatrists on this programme, I believe that it is, I'm going to get a lot of stick for saying this, but it is some sort of disorder. It's not right. It's not a disorder that's going to kill anybody. It's not right. a disorder that somebody can't live with. But I do believe it's a psychological problem. It isn't a physical problem. And you know what? You're a bigot when you say that. You're a bigot because you can't even, you know, you can't even talk about it. Go ahead.
Well, it is a disorder that will kill you. In fact, the suicide rate amongst transgender individuals is 41%, as opposed to something like, I don't know, 4% amongst non-transgender, if you will. I don't even like to use this term because I don't want to give credence to it. Ultimately, we need some people who are willing to take the backlash and be called a hater and be called a homophobe, even though we are not haters and we are not homophobic. I'm not fearful or scared of anyone. I prove that every day by the work I do with the Activist Mommy. I'm willing to take the death threats and the hatred that I receive on Twitter and elsewhere, because I am going to side with science. I'm going to side with reason. I'm going to side with conscience.
Can I ask you a question, Elizabeth, on that? And I'd be a bad presenter if I didn't ask this. And it's not cheeky, and I'm not trying to, you know, embarrass you. Would you have a gay man or a lesbian woman as a friend? Could you be a close Absolutely. Friend with somebody? You could.
Absolutely. I do have homosexual friends. If you look on my page, you'll see yesterday that I posted a very long email exchange between me and a homosexual man who was reaching out to me for advice. And I very kindly and gently spent weeks in a back and forth email with this man who it was a mesmerizing conversation. It was a beautiful conversation. And I encourage your listeners to go to the Activist Mommy page on Facebook and read this exchange that I had. Scroll down, 10 posts or so, and read this exchange. I love all people. I love homosexuals. Again, I don't love all ideas. How can we love all ideas? How can we love all actions? We can't love all actions when they are wrong, when they are harmful to others. And the truth of it is that some of these actions are harmful. We used to see gender dysphoria in this country. My husband is a medical doctor. He's a family doctor. We used to see gender dysphoria in this country as a disorder that needs to be treated compassionately by medical professionals. And that is the way it still should be treated. And you said the issue hasn't been settled. I believe the issue is settled. It's always been settled. If you were born biologically in your DNA as a male, you are a male, whether you feel like it or not. We've got to stop being governed by our feelings and be governed by facts.
Yes, because I have to agree with this. You know, and I'm treading a fine line here because, you know, we would have gay and lesbian listeners, and I know it's a sensitive thing for them when you talk about sexuality, when you talk about the LGBT community, and I don't censor myself. You know, my opinions are out there for people to see. I think you're right. There is no biological proof that it's a physiological problem. It seems to be a psychological problem. I'm glad you said compassionate. I mean, to be fair to you, Elizabeth, you don't sound at all patronizing. Compassionate means, you know, that you point people in the direction of other literature, you know, and the fact that I think the psychiatric community is pretty unified in believing that you know, a boy with male genitalia who thinks that he's in the wrong body and is having confusion and is having problems is having some sort of psychological episode. I think they're unified in saying that. So why can't we talk about that?
Actually, one thing that people need to understand is that medical communities, if you will, medical organizations are not always lining up with facts. They are oftentimes motivated by politics. They are political organizations, ultimately. And for instance, the American Pediatric Association recently came out in favor of genital mutilation, FGM, female genital mutilation, because they were trying to be all, you know, tolerant and go along with the Muslims, if you will. Well, they got such an extreme backlash from coming out with a statement in support of FGM that they immediately reversed their position. How do you put out a studied medical position and then immediately reverse it because of the political and social backlash you get? It's because these are political organizations, and people want to quote these psychiatric organizations and pediatric organizations go, oh, look, now they are agreeing with us and they're saying that transgender is not a mental illness. Well, guess what? That doesn't mean that they are basing their statements and their positions on fact. They are political organizations that are being lobbied and pressured by the LGBT community. And I also wanted to say, because you were talking about me saying, you know, that I have compassion on the people in the LGBT community. Don't confuse my passion on this issue where we're talking about Teen Vogue. Don't confuse my passion and my mama bear righteous indignation on this issue where I'm wanting to protect children from this hypersexualization. Don't confuse that with a lack of compassion.
Yeah, yeah.
That is compassion. That's motherly compassion for impressionable youth.
I have
the same compassion for homosexuals.
Elizabeth, we had a situation here a week or so ago on national radio where a UK education minister told a BBC breakfast radio presenter, who, you won't be surprised, didn't challenge the education minister, but the education minister said, we're going to have to make it compulsory to talk about sexting with children in schools because sexting is at epidemic levels. It was an extraordinary thing for him to say. Not that we need to talk as adults about how we can, you know, how we can extricate the mobile phones and tablets away from the hands of our children. Not that conversation. Let's have a conversation about making it compulsory that parents, you know, on punishment of a fine, if the parents don't bring the children to these classes, we're going to give them, you know, sex education for the 21st century. This is tyrannical. Surely any talk about sexuality belongs in the home and is the responsibility of mom and dad, right?
You're sounding like a hater right now, but yeah, I'm sounding like a Christian,
right? So, and is there a movement against, you know, mom and dad teaching these skills to children in the US? Are you seeing that as well in the US? Compulsory sex education, talk about gender fluidity, talk about these issues. Are you seeing the same thing over there?
Yes, absolutely. There is definitely a move to take control out of the hands of parents and to take parental rights away and to give more control to the government and the government school system. We have situations here in America where children in high school are being taken to get abortions at abortion facilities, and the parents don't even know about it, that their grandchild is being killed at an abortion facility, and the parents aren't even informed. You know, you have to have a parent's permission to take an aspirin at school, but the school will, in the name of protecting the child, the student's privacy, go kill your grandbaby without you even knowing about it.
We've only got a couple of minutes left. I've read stories in the mainstream media in the United States that support exactly what you just said there. We look at transhumanism a lot, and I know that a lot of Christian organizations are looking at it as well. Transhumanism is deadly. It's deadly for us as a species, and it's coming. And a lot of people think that this confusing gender for children, trying to create a gender-neutral future, this non-binary thing, this androgynous thing, has a lot to do with the coming transhumanist agenda as we get merged more and more with technology. And that serves a couple of agendas. One, a depopulation agenda. The other one, you know, striking at the heart of the family unit. Transhumanism, Elizabeth, have you looked into any of that? Have you heard any of it?
It's like human, non-human technology, right?
Yeah, it's kind of transforming us biologically by merging us with technology, yeah. Basically changing our biological makeup by implanting certain technology. It's all the rage. I've interviewed some of the pioneers of it on this program now. They start kids off with addicting them to mobile phones and tablets and other devices, and it eventually moves on to, you've probably seen these new tattoos that are smart tattoos, where they put a tattoo on the skin and the tattoo can change, you know, it can change, I suppose, to different images if it's connected to the internet and stuff like that. It's a very, very serious agenda.
Very frightening.
It is, yeah. And I just wondered, had you been looking into that? You might be...
Not much, actually. No, I haven't. I don't know if you guys are farther along that path in the UK than we are here, but I'll have to look more into that.
Do you know, it's been great having you on the program today. I just want to mention again why you came on. You've been listening, by the way, to Elizabeth Johnston. Elizabeth is the activist mommy. I'm tweeting out all the links to where you can find Elizabeth on Facebook. Millions of people watched her, her I think, righteous outrage at the article in Teen Vogue magazine. Disgraceful, really, about anal sex. The same article, the same edition, also talking about gender fluidity and homosexuality, aiming these articles at very young children. Elizabeth made the great point. If you texted that article to a 12 or a 13-year-old child, you'd be accused of grooming. Elizabeth, you have the last word for 30 seconds and then we'll part company, but I will be inviting you back on again. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for having me on. I just want to encourage everyone to go to my Facebook page and watch the 2-minute video. It's pinned to the top of the page. It'll be the first thing you see. And please click share if you agree with what I say in the video. If you're concerned about the sexual agenda that's being pushed on our children, share it with the hashtag #PullTeenVogue. The hashtag has been trending, so we're happy about that. And go to your local grocery stores and bookstores and gas stations and libraries and see if they carry Teen Vogue. And as a concerned citizen, ask the manager or the store owner to please no longer carry Teen Vogue, which is really just pushing hypersexualization on our children. We're about to start pressuring the advertisers as well of Teen Vogue to pull their support of this publication. And also, the last thing you could do is email Paul Adams of the Department of Justice at paul.adams@usdoj.gov. And he's in communications, and let him know that Teen Vogue is pandering indecency to minors, and this is not lawful. And I just want to encourage everybody to help us support the natural family and natural sexuality that we are moving way, way too far away from. Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you on, Elizabeth. Thanks for doing it. Look after yourself. I know you've got plenty of these interviews to do today and in the coming days as well. Thanks for that. Elizabeth Johnston, the activist mommy, on the line there from New York City. Now, Yvonne in Austria, who's been on the program last time he did a phone in, is in complete disagreement with this, with me and Elizabeth, as Yvonne is entitled to be and is tweeting out there that gender neutral has nothing to do with sexuality. Yvonne believes that what's happening in schools is actually trying to allow children to be who they want to be. But I would argue with Yvonne, and I've said this before, and it's difficult. It's unfair, I suppose, because I have the platform here and Yvonne doesn't. But I'm going to restate my case here. They're encouraging. They are encouraging very young children to think about an identity, to think about the gender they identify with. They're providing young children with a number of different identities and asking young children who should be, you know, chasing one another around playgrounds, playing games, kicking a ball, playing basketball, whatever, to consider their sexuality. They want to talk about having sex with very young children. They shouldn't be doing that. What happened to childhood? Jean Ann said to me a few minutes ago, you know, they're taking childhood away from children. I want to mention, by the way, my webmaster, Aaron Calland, put me on to this story. Aaron is listening at the moment. Cheers, Aaron. He put me on to the story and recommended that I give Elizabeth a shout, which I did, and got her on. So they're interfering at a time when a child is very, 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 very impressionable. And for me, and I would take issue, and I did take issue with Elizabeth, you know, this idea of natural. I have no problem, I never have had any problem with sexuality, with people living with whoever they want to live with and, you know, living the life they want to lead. And that's the truth, that. None whatsoever. I have no issue with that whatsoever. I'm very interested in transgender, gender identity, this non-binary stuff, you know, this LGBT campaign on sharing toilets and all this sort of stuff. I'm interested in where that's actually coming from, because I don't believe Peter Tatchell. Love Peter as I do. I love the man. I've known him years. Spoke to him in the flesh only a couple of times, but I've interviewed him on the radio thousands of times, probably. Hundreds anyway. This is not out of kindness. This isn't about, you know, making, you know, a lovely rainbow world, no pun intended, where everybody is kind to one another. It's not about that. There are laws. Nobody should approach a gay couple, man, lesbian or gay, and abuse them and tell them that they're wrong, they're out of order, you're unnatural, you're the devil, and all of that garbage. Nobody should do that. That is abuse. That is harassment. You know, if the person says, listen, stick your ideas up your arse, go away, mind your own business, and you persist, you are in the wrong. Leave people alone. And tolerate people. Be tolerant of your gay friends, your gay colleagues, your gay workmates, your gay neighbours. They can do whatever they want. It's supposed to be a free world. So long as they're not, you know, in any way interfering with your life. As long as it's not impeding on you, and how could it anyway? Let them be who they want to be. Couldn't care less whether you're straight, gay, whatever. I don't care if you identify as a man and you were born a woman. I don't actually care. I care when you connect the dots and you put it alongside the other agendas we talk about here. Then it becomes very serious. And I also don't believe, and if I'm ever proved wrong, I'll say I'm wrong, that this is a physiological problem. It is not, in my opinion. What the hell do I know? I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychiatrist. But I've interviewed people, medical people, qualified people, who say, to their credit, that they can't find any physiological evidence, although they're still looking, to show that changes are taking place within the body. Chemical, biological changes that lead the young man or the young woman to think they're in the wrong body. So while there is no evidence to support that, you have to consider that it is a psychological condition. And you have to talk about that. And you have to look into it. And you have to see how the transgender man or transgender woman, how it is affecting their life. Are they having problems? Are they having issues with depression, with self-harming, with suicidal thoughts, that sort of stuff? And if there's anything you can do about it. You should not fear being called transphobic and all of that garbage. These liberal, lefty, identitarian terms. Oh, you're transphobic. You know, you're terrified. You hate. No, I don't hate anybody. The last time I went to a party, Fab Radio, I was dancing with a transgender man. For most of the evening, it must be said. And there was no drink involved. I don't care what people are. Follow the evidence. The evidence is there's an agenda. And that article in Teen Vogue magazine is a disgrace. And I ain't Mary Whitehouse. It's a disgrace to be peddling that to children as young as 12 or 13. It says 3.5 minutes past the hour time. To take another very quick break. Back then with music, and Dean Henderson joins me in a few minutes. You don't want to miss Dean. Amazing guy who's written a couple of absolutely outstanding books. We're going to be talking about anti-Semitism versus anti-Zionism in a minute.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
And you're very welcome back. It's exactly 5 minutes past the hour. It's Tuesday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. The 18th of July? The 18th of July, warm day. But weather warnings have been issued. Weather warnings have been issued. Apparently we're going to have storms and biblical rain overnight across the northwest and other parts of the UK. I think we had our summer a few weeks back, when Caroline was in France and I was melting here in the studio with all the windows open in my birthday suit in the nude. That's a horrible song, that. I hope you're not eating. This is your Richie Allen Show. There's none quite like it. Broadcasting live on DavidIke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and RichieAllen.co.uk. The terrific Dean Henderson is live on the Richie Allen Show from Missouri in a couple of minutes' time. Before that, here is the Mock Turtles. This is called Can You Dig It on your Richie Allen Show.
Can you understand me now? I'll get it through somehow. You won't ever get me down. Won't see me hanging.
Let's crack on with it then. Our next guest is a terrific guy. He's been on this program ever since it started last Omidus back in early February. He's written 5 outstanding books. He really has, folks. I can't recommend the books highly enough. Big Oil and Their Bankers in the Persian Gulf, 4 Horsemen, 8 Families and Their Global Intelligence, Narcotics and Terror Network, The Grateful Unrich, A Revolution in 50 Countries, Sticking It to the Matrix and the Federal Reserve Cartel. You can read him at hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. That is hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Great geopolitical commentator, a regular contributor to Press TV and many other media outlets as well. Let's welcome back to the program our friend Dean Henderson. Dean, welcome back.
Hey, Richie. Great to be back.
Important time to have you back as well. The French President Emmanuel Macron, as strongly as any politician in recent times, has condemned anti-Zionism and has again connected it to the specter and the racism of anti-Semitism. It's a reinvented form of anti-Semitism, is anti-Zionism, said Macron. We've heard a lot of this in the British press in recent weeks as well. What do you make of it, Dean? Why now?
Well, of course, Macron is just a tool of the Illuminati. You know, he was the guy they used to squash the nationalist movement in France behind Le Pen. And you could see right away that this guy was, you know, bought off. And so, you know, there's no more racist people on earth than Israelis and the way they treat Palestinians in Gaza with their apartheid system. Now, yesterday we hear they're going to actually start, you know, separating the Muslims from the Jews at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and, of course, the Palestinians. So, no, that's not going to happen. So they're just constantly harassing and treating the Palestinians like way worse than the Jewish people were treated in the Warsaw Ghetto even, which was horrible. And as you know, none of us have any problem with the Jewish people that remark on Israel, that remark on Zionism, because Israel is just one component of their, you know, their toolbox for a world takeover by this oligarchy. And the Jewish people are actually being put in harm's way in Israel by the Illuminati. You know, Hitler's emigration chief was named Rosenbaum. He was Jewish. And if you had $1,000, you could buy your way into Israel. And so all the people that made it out of the ghettos and weren't sent to the camps were actually the wealthy, the wealthier people. And then they got in behind the Stern and the Haganah gangs and Menachem Begin and all these guys, and they just butchered Palestinians, stole their homes, burned down their olive groves, and occupy their land, and it's still being occupied to this day. So always these Zionists are on the defense because they know that it's like a psychopath. When you're dealing with a psychopath, he or she will sit there trying to tell you that you're something when actually they're the ones doing it. And that's what it is with these Zionist bankers. They know that they're the racists. They know that they're basically invented Nazism, invented white supremacy, invented the eugenics movement, invented this notion that white people's brains are bigger than black people's brains, and still the British Crown and the City of London are behind this whole racist, fascist, Nazi, Zionist ideology. So they have to then say that when we criticize them, it's us, you know, we're the ones that are racist, we're the ones that are anti-Semites. You know, even though, as you know, Semitic means dark-skinned people from the Middle East, and that pretty much means Arabs.
Certainly does. Why are they worried, Dean? I ask that because they've been getting their own way for 60 years, 70 years. And you see this movement now against anti-Zionism, and we've seen it here in the UK with the problems some members of the Labour Party have had. The former mayor of London, Ken Livingstone, basically being thrown out, not, you know, officially not yet thrown out of the Labour Party, but for talking about these issues. And yet, to me, it seems like the Zionist plans, the Zionist agenda rolls on. I know that the boycott, divestment, sanction movement has definitely hurt Israel. They wouldn't make so much noise about it if it didn't. But largely, as far as the Palestinians go, and as far as settlements go, and you know the brutality, the brutal occupation goes, it's business as usual. What are they worried about?
Well, you know, I think there is, thanks to you and others with these shows, and you know, we're trying to raise awareness. So I think this is happening, actually, despite the setbacks at the, you know, political level in this country and in other countries recently in the West, which is meaning a move to the right. I mean, I think basically people are seeing that, you know, there is no equality in this world, that there are these very few people that run the show. And so they still have to always demonize these ideas, demonize the word conspiracy, tell you that you're paranoid if you talk about these things, even though you can show them 1,000 footnotes. And they won't even look at them, most people. They're just blinded to it, even if it's right in front of them. But this is changing. The veil's coming off. And despite these setbacks, there is an awareness. And so they really right now are going to, you know, just be vicious and just demonize anyone who has a shred of the truth. They're doing kind of this with the alt-right, you know, in the United States, who, you know, mistakenly supported Trump because they have a mistaken political ideology. And that's a whole nother thing. But they're learning, hopefully, too. And there's this awareness. So they're always very worried. And I think maybe never more than now, because now we have finally a counterbalance with the Russians, especially Putin, who is very aware of the Illuminati, very aware, as is Assad, by the way. He talks about it all the time whenever you get to hear him, which isn't very often, because he talks about it. He uses the word Illuminati when he talks about them, and Masons, and he uses these words. And there's this awareness, and now we have world leaders. Maduro's another one in Venezuela who actually use this lexicon and talk about these people in this way, like there is this cabal of people running the world, very few of them, and that is the reality that we are living in. And so, you know, they are desperate right now to keep covering those tracks, keep demonizing anyone who says that, write them off, put them in a white coat and send them, you know, packing. So, you know, it's just a constant barrage. I think, you know, we had this more in the United States maybe 10 years ago, and what Europe's going through now with this kind of witch hunt. Anyone who's criticizes Israel is an anti-Semite. I think, almost think we're past that now in the U.S., where we can actually maybe talk about that a little bit more without, you know, and we're getting some people to finally get it. But still, if you go to the Democrat Party in this country, yeah, then there's going to be a fight. Even with Bernie Sanders, even some of his committee, like Cornel West, were opposed to Sanders' position, which they didn't think was hard enough on Israel. You know, so there's still this going on, but I think at least in the U.S. we're past the sort of the point where you can demonize people just for criticizing Israel or just for, you know, criticizing Zionism.
It's interesting. The U.S. always fascinates me because you have a Congress and you have a Senate. And you have, of course, you have lobbyists working in D.C., special interest groups. And there is a huge percentage of Zionists working within D.C., not only in the Senate, in Congress, and in the lobby groups, but proportionally far, far greater than the actual number of Jews living in the United States of America. And for me, it's always been a dead giveaway, Dean. You know, less than 1%, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, of Americans identify as Jewish. And yet you have extraordinary levels of Jewish influence. And I mean Jewish lobby influence. I mean Zionist influence, AIPAC influence, yeah, and beyond. You know, right at the center of the corridors of power. The evidence is there. I mean, I always go back to the Cynthia McKinney interview when she blew us away a couple of years ago. And she said she hadn't even sat down and removed her coat on the day she took office for the first time, when the Jewish lobby was in the door asking her to sign the pact. You've got to sign the pact. And if you do, you'll get money, you'll get this, you'll get that, you'll get everything. You know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And she was run out of office by that same crowd of people because she refused to do that. And she talked about 9/11 and how they were involved with it and different things. But you're absolutely right. That's a very small percentage of Jewish people in this country, and yet they wield this enormous influence. You can criticize Muslims, hell, you can hate Muslims. Hell, it's encouraged to hate Muslims in this country. That's part of the CIA program right now with ISIS. But if you speak ill, or you can criticize Christians. You can, you know, go off on George Bush or Hillary Clinton all day long, and nobody's going to say, well, you're anti-Christian because you went after Bush, or you're anti-Christian because you went after Clinton. But the minute you go after, I don't know, Joe Lieberman or Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was the crook behind Hillary's cheating on Bernie Sanders, the minute you do that, then all of a sudden you're an anti-Semite. But like I say, it's fading here, but I think in Europe it's still like that, and it's just not right. And of course, we know the real reason, Richie, is that these families that you know, own the lobbyists, that own the media, the mainstream media, lock, stock, and barrel, that have every congressman beholden, almost everyone, to them, that these same people are the ones that profit from war and own the defense contractors. They're the same people that own the big oil companies, and they're the same people who own the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England and the Bundesbank and the Bank of France and the Bank of Australia and the Bank of Canada and every central bank.
And every other central bank. I do want to make one point, though, and this is going to sound, you know, lefty and liberal, but it isn't. I don't pull any punches. I know what Zionism is, and I know what Judaism is. And I'm lucky enough to have Jewish friends. And, you know, most of them are very active in pro-Palestinian causes and activism.
Me too.
And I know you are, Dean. And I know you've many Jewish friends back home and elsewhere around the world. Within the independent media, though, sadly, you know, I still see the old cartoons. You know the cartoons I'm talking about? The stingy, mean Jewish guy hunched over with the big nose. You know the one I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. We see these cartoons being spread around by people. People like that Muppet, Ken O'Keefe and others like him. And I wonder what's going on there. You know, is there some movement to prevent voices within the independent media? I don't mean mine, because I'm not a voice. I'm a presenter. You're a voice, you're a writer, and you're an activist, and you're brilliant at it. It's my job to provide a platform for guys like you. I am not a voice. But you see these guys and you think, that's just... And I hate to use the word racism, because it's a much bigger word than most people understand. And it's used too easily. It's used too easily to shut down free speech and to shut down dissent. However, Ken O'Keefe is a racist. David Duke, I would say, is a racist.
Yes.
They hate Jews. It's as simple as that. Am I right?
Yes. Yes, and this is a big problem in those circles, in that alt-right bunch. And there are many instances where, it's disgusting. I think beyond that, I think you have to wonder who among these people that are spreading these fallacies and these, and they are racist, I'll call them racist because that's what they are, notions. You got to wonder if they're not connected somehow with the intelligence community and with this Zionist lobby, because they're trying to muddy up, see, the information we're getting out with this kind of stuff, and then it's guilt by association, see, after that. And, oh, they're all just like that guy. Well, yeah, it doesn't do anybody any good when you put out crap like that, because anytime you lump any group of people together, any whatever that group is, whether it's environmentalists or Jews or women or animals even or anything, and just make these blanket statements about those people, you're just basically showing how ignorant you are about reality. Because every individual is different. Everyone has a soul and free will and the ability to be a good or a bad person, go along with this cabal, get bought off and just become a cog in their wheel, or fight these bastards like we're doing. You got your choice. So you can never say ever about any group of people that it's just these people. And the exception to that, and there is an exception to that, and it's this global oligarchy that runs everything, that puts out this disinformation, that tries to divide us in exactly this kind of way by muddying up what otherwise is good information with bad information. See, the way I look at it, Richie, they gave the kind of alt-right free rein with the Rothschild stuff, in a way, because the alt-right has a bad and a flawed, to me, political ideology. In other words, we're just going to go free market and we're going to privatize, and that's great. And we want our liberty, and they kind of cloak it in liberty. But they don't realize that, you know, a libertarian party in this country is funded by the Cato Institute, which is funded by ExxonMobil, DuPont, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. This is exactly this type of economy they want. This is taking us back to medieval times when there was no regulations, no protections for working people, no nothing. And it is the survival of not the fittest, but the richest.
Dean, I could kiss you. I could kiss you, my friend. I'm sick to death of these free marketeers. I'm sick, and I like so many of them. I like them.
I do.
I like Jeff Berwick. I love Jeff coming on the program. But Jeff is wrong. How can you say, let's deregulate everything, let the market sort everything out? Oh, that's great, Jeff. You know, and people with disabilities and people that are sick and people who can't work, they'll be looked after, won't they?
Right.
No, they won't. Go ahead, Dean. Go ahead.
No, they won't. Exactly, Richie. And it's just, I mean, not only that, but here we've been on this path ever since you guys, you know, got stuck with Thatcher and we got stuck with Reagan. And I'm thinking of Pink Floyd, the Final Cut album here. And, you know, it's just like ever since then, this is what we've been doing. And how's that been working out for us? And if you can't see how that's been working out, and if you can't connect the dots between jobs going to China and Walmart and all this kind of stuff, and just letting them run and deregulating, and your standard of living going down, and unions being broken, and working people not being even respected at all, even though we're the real wealth creators, we're the ones that create wealth, not bosses. Bosses mostly, they hire people, they sit around a lot, they talk on the phone a lot, they don't do too much, they make a lot of money. Workers actually get out there and they do the stuff, put it together, get it shipped, whatever. And so here we are, and these people are unbelievably are still, and Alex Jones right now is the worst, because he's just, I'm starting to really wonder about this guy big time, because, now he's going off against the G20 protesters, in Hamburg. Like there's some kind of, No, man, I don't know. I think the guy's, he's a tool or he's something, because he's just off the reservation on this crazy right-wing path and still supporting Trump and everything he does. And even though Trump is a moderate, he's so stupid, he doesn't even know that. So it's a lot of ignorance. It's a lot of lack of education, lack of education in the area of political theory, political economics, international political economics, resource economics, the way things really work, the reality of how things work. And that's a big part of it. And then there are people, who are bought and paid for. And we might have just mentioned a couple of them.
Yeah, here. We certainly did mention a couple of them. Dean Henderson is on the line. I don't say this very, very often. Dean is a genius. He's a geopolitical, analytical genius. He really is. Yeah. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Go to Left Hook. HendersonLeftHook.wordpress.com. Come here and I tell you, Dean, I'm going to give you a laugh. I used to be a tour guide at Waterford Crystal, the great crystal factory, many years ago. So I used to meet a lot of Americans who used to come into the factory to see the great glass cutting and the glass blowing. And the American visitors were brilliant. They were fantastic people. They loved to see the handcrafted products, and they were brilliant. Sometimes they always asked intelligent questions. And you think there's a punchline here. There isn't. This is true. They would ask intelligent questions. And sometimes they would say, "Son, are you unionized?" And I would say, yeah, we're all part of the union. And they would frown. And I would say, "Sir, do you mind me asking you, what do you do for a living?" And he would say, "I'm a bus driver." And I would say, "Surely you're unionized." "No, not anymore, thank God." And I couldn't believe it. And as I was meeting more and more American people, I found that working class Americans who'd saved up for years to come to Ireland to see the sights frowned on unions. What happened in your country to make people scared of unions, Dean?
Yeah, it's been a long campaign. See, Reagan broke the air traffic controllers union strike way back, when he was president in the 80s. And that was so huge because, first thing he did when he did that, he declared a general strike illegal, which is just, it's just unheard of. I mean, to even make that claim. But that really was the beginning when he broke that union. And there was meatpacking strikes after that up where I'm from. I was at some of those rallies, and it was just a brutal campaign. There was cops sent in, people were beat up, people were framed. I had a friend who was framed for rape, who was an activist in Chicago at the time, trying to help the meat packers in Iowa, over there. And it was brutal. I mean, it wasn't Joe Hill. It wasn't quite to the level of Joe Hill, back in the 19 teens, when the Wobblies were active. And the Wobblies, of course, were an anarchist kind of union. And this is when the unions were the strongest, was the 20s and 30s, in this country, really. And there were, there was brutal stuff done to those people that in the Haymarket fire in Chicago and all this stuff. So it's not just going back to Reagan. This country seems to have this really long history of brutality against radicals, brutality against communists, socialists, unions, anybody that's really left, that really, not a liberal, not somebody that's willing to turn the other cheek necessarily, maybe somebody that's going to punch back. But when it comes down to those kind of people, boy, it's vicious here. And I myself have experienced plenty of it over the years in terms of just getting harassed and having trouble and a couple times nearly dying and things like this. So it's serious. So I don't know where it comes from. I really, you know, because it comes from before that. It comes from before Reagan. But it's just this real viciousness towards kind of the extreme left. It's not just unions, but it's anybody, like I said, who's a revolutionary, which is really ironic because we are a revolutionary country, right? I mean, our older history than that takes us back to the time when we actually fought the, you know, King George's army. The very crown of England that you and I know runs the damn thing, and including the Zionists and everybody, and along with the Rothschilds and these families. So, you know, it's just so ironic that, I don't know, it seemed like, yeah, maybe about the turn of the century, the 1900s, this country just got so, they forgot that we were a revolutionary country maybe, and people still do. And then when they celebrate the 4th, I don't even think anybody in this country is thinking about the British, the crown that we fought. They're thinking about Muslims or ISIS or the North Koreans or some pittance of a threat that's not a threat, most of which is conjured up by the CIA and the British intelligence and all this stuff. And they just forgot. They forgot that we're a revolutionary country, just like Venezuela, just like Iran, just like Syria, just like these countries that have, you know, Vietnam with Ho Chi Minh, that have fought against colonial power and won. And yet we now side, not as the lead country, but as sort of a junior partner to the City of London, even cowed like that, bent over like that, you know, being used basically. $23 trillion in debt. Our boys die. We get what? Not much. And the crown and the oligarchs and the Rothschilds clean up on the oil contracts. And it is sickening, really, is what it is, Richie, to see Americans this, a revolutionary country of, you know, people that should have remembered that and be proud of that and live by that creed. And now they're just cowed over. They go to work too much. They work 60 hours a week. Nobody complains. Nobody even stands up for a worker beside them too much anymore like it used to be. You know, and when I worked in the factories, we you know, we didn't take any shit, okay, ever. At least not the factories I worked in. And there was plenty of confrontation and plenty of tense moments. And I don't even think people have that in them anymore. I don't know. It's just they're broke. They're like horses that have been broke, sheep that have been put to pasture. And it's frightening. And I think technology and the internet and just this fixation with the screen time is washing out any sense of fight yet that they have, because it's all about creating this political correctness. And it's not about justice or righteousness anymore. It's about saying the right thing. You know, you got to say just the right thing about the transgender bathroom issue and just the right thing about all these things that don't even matter. And that's mostly Talmudic smut anyway, that's trying to reverse genders and screw us up and take us down the wrong path. And this is kind of where we sit. It's all superficial now. There's no depth. There's just not any depth here. We went to Steve Earle concert in Memphis last Saturday. I don't know if you're familiar with his music.
Oh yeah, legend. Yeah, of course. Copperhead Rock, one of the best albums
ever. Yeah,
he's a legend.
He's a fighter. Yeah. And this is, if you listen to, he's a great songwriter. Learned it all from Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark, and two of the best, ever. And he just writes the songs, and they're all radical, revolutionary songs. And you know, I just thinking, I don't even know if there's anybody in this generation now that could write a song of that depth anymore.
I want to talk about Syria in a minute, but on this theme, it sounds like the concept that the people united will never be divided. You think as a concept, for me, that's one of the great ideas to live by. And I know you believe that as well. But as a concept, you think it's dead in the water right now anyway?
Right now. Doesn't mean it can't come back. Doesn't mean that, you know, if there's a huge stock market crash, for example, in a couple months, which not saying I'm predicting that or anything, but not saying I'm not either. It'll happen then. That's when it'll happen. As you know, Richie, revolutionary situations are created by economic downturns. And, you know, this is the history of the world. This can't be refuted. In every situation, this has been the case. And when a family's not eating anymore, then things get different maybe. You know, then finally they'll shut the TV off and the computer off, and they'll do something about it. So Not to say it won't happen, I think people really have to become aware of the dangers of this technology and the cell phone towers and the electronic waves that they're taking in, and just the zombie kind of way that a computer makes a person. It's not a person, it's a computer. And if you deal with that all day instead of people all day, you're going to get all messed up and you're going to get indecisive and you're going to lose your confidence and you're going to be depressed and you're going to be a lot of things that aren't you. And this is, I think, could possibly also be sort of the spearhead of the alien invasion, making people like this, making people more robots, and really like ushering in, you know, this new bureau thing that people say could be happening right now. So it's a very dangerous time. It's also, I think it's just a time when you get your personal stuff together and you become that human being again above everything else. You just plug in with nature, you plug in with your family, your good friends, you show them your love, you take care of them, and you stay on the side of good, because there's something going on right now where they're really trying to take a big chunk of us and take us along for this sort of satanic evil ride that they want to go on.
I'm going to read a comment from my honorary producer, Jean-Ann Crowley in Dublin, and then I'm going to take a 90-second break, and we'll come back, then we'll talk about Syria and Assad's great stand against the tyranny and whether there's a great opportunity in that for the rest of the world. We'll talk about that in a second. Jean-Ann tweets, this is part of the bigger plan. She's enjoying listening to Dean. Decimate worker solidarity. Well, taking away the manufacturer base in the US helped, didn't it? Then weaken and destroy the middle classes. Poison people with vaxes and chemtrailing so that in the end, it'll be the oligarchy and the serfs, with naturally all offices of government and the police serving their masters. A boot in the face of humanity forever, says Jean-Ann, who says, nice. Tongue in cheek, then she says, I'm cheerful today, aren't I? The great Dean Henderson is on the line. Do check him out. Do bookmark hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. We're honoured by his presence. We don't say that very often. He's going to stick around because we've got about 15-16 minutes left after a very, very quick 90-second break. Dean can grab a glass of water there. Back with talk of Assad and Putin after these.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the program. The terrific Dean Henderson, live from Missouri, on the program. Dean, thanks for staying with us. I'm going to jump straight in with the next question because time is flying. Is there a huge opportunity in what Assad has managed to do, which people like Muammar Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein and others were not able to do before him, and that is to kind of hold off, with the aid of Russia, the imperialist forces? Is there a great opportunity in this for us? How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, I think That's absolutely right, Richie. I think there is great opportunity and great reason for hope in the fact that they were able to hold these guys off, because, you know, this is the Illuminati coming at them, and not many people do that successfully. And it definitely has to do with the fact that you have this alliance between, you know, Syria, Russia, and you have to also say Iran and Hezbollah, because all those parties have been very important, including Hezbollah, very important in fighting these guys back. So we'll see where it takes us. There will be more provocations. This probably isn't over yet. You know how it is, but does seem like with Trump in office, things have settled down a little bit. And if they can, you know, get along. I mean, the interesting thing about this, of course, with all the, you know, anti-Russian propaganda in this country, and, you know, trying to connect the Russians with, you know, stealing the election from Hillary or whatever, which is all just, there's no facts behind any of it. It was all manufactured, you know, according to Julian Assange, this Vault 7 that's going to come out. It's all CIA that did all this hacking, NSA, whoever, British intelligence, Mossad, the same people. And then they're just saying it's the Russians. Beyond that, it's not Putin that any of these people are affiliated with. Trump does have connections with some of these Russian mafia people. But see, what they're doing here is they're demonizing, they're not demonizing Trump really with this stuff. They're demonizing Putin because he is an enemy of the Illuminati and a sworn enemy, and with a lot of guns and nuclear weapons. And they do not like what happened in Syria one bit, these people. So they're trying to do this, you know, the anti-Russian thing by trying to, you know, connect Trump with the government of Russia, which there's no connection to. But he does have connections to the Russian mafia because he's a mobster too. He owns casinos. That's kind of, you know, that's kind of the business he's in.
Right.
And, you know, but that doesn't have anything to do with Putin. Putin, in fact, went after these oligarchs, went after Boris Berezovsky, went after, you know, renationalized Yukos Oil Company. And some of these companies were in 98, you know, the CIA, Goldman Sachs, I'm sure Trump had some, you know, contract bit role in it, maybe even, you know, the New York crowd anyway goes into Moscow. They basically make the ruble take a dive by shorting it, and then they clean up and take over all the oil assets in Russia. When that happened, the Four Horsemen of Oil, which is ExxonMobil, Chevron, Texaco, Royal Dutch Shell, BP, Amoco, those companies increased their net worth by 50%, you know, doubled their net worth, in other words. And so that was a crime. The whole thing was a crime led by the Harvard, you know, policy wonks that were connected to Goldman Sachs. And so Putin came in after that, and he's done nothing but just clean up and pick up the pieces and go after these criminals, all of who... These oligarchs all have dual Israeli passports, every single one of them. And so they're the ones, the oligarchs, or who ransacked Russia with Goldman Sachs and who Trump has connections with, and Clinton too, I'm sure. And but Putin is the enemy of all of this whole bunch of people. He could care less about Trump, really. It's just, I think he did understand that he could work with the guy a little better. And it looks like so far that's the case. And if this thing on Syria can work out, this peace deal, then that's the other thing. It's also going to change the relationship between Russia and the United States, which is very, very, very important. Because if we have any chance of getting out of this sort of Anglo-Israeli, Saudi Zionist nexus that we're, as I say, a junior partner in, basically, and this cabal that's running us in the debt, doing the same to everyone in the world, in fact, if we have any chance of that, we're going to have to be not just sort of friends with Russia, but I mean real strong allies of the Russians, which is what the United States should be, because we have more of a common history. The people are more alike, you know, we're kind of freewheeling, kind of crazy people, you know. Yeah. And we're just a lot of similarities. In fact, the Russians came and saved this country under Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. The Rothschilds at that time were trying to tear this country apart with their little Confederacy idea. And Judah Benjamin and all this stuff was going on, and they were they're trying to go after Lincoln and say he was a country bumpkin and all this, and here come the Russian fleet off the coast of the Atlantic and basically threatened these people and said, look, here's going to be the deal, and saved us as a country during the Civil War. Very few Americans realize that, And we should be so grateful to the Russians for that. And so we just have a lot of commonality. We've been screwed with by these same people for years, just constantly. And everybody has. But, you know, we're the two biggest country. We have all the guns. Think about what would happen if Russia, United States just got together as allies and then turned our guns on this private banking cartel and said game over.
That would be game over. Sound? It would be absolutely game over. Do you know when I think of Putin, Dean, a wry smile always comes to my face because Putin is undoubtedly a bit of a rogue. But it doesn't mean that he's not got his priorities right and he's not doing the best thing for his people. You know, it doesn't mean that he's not doing that. And I sometimes think of Putin and his KGB history. It's very possible, and it might even be probable, that while the various administrations that Putin worked for might not have believed in the motherland and Mother Russia and doing everything that's good for Russia, Putin might believe it. He might very well believe it. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he could even be like a real, real super deep cover KGB guy that they just, they're like, okay, we're going to let Yeltsin come in and we'll let the IMF party in Moscow for a couple weeks. And we're going to keep this guy in reserve and take care of. I think you're exactly right. I think that's exactly what he is. And you know what? That doesn't bother me at all.
No.
That makes me happy. That makes me glad the Russians had some foresight in the whole thing. You know what I mean? I think you're right, though. I think that's exactly what Putin, I think all along he's been deep cover KGB.
That's a phenomenal, I mean, because of course the big fear that people have is that the cabal, as you brilliantly described them, the Israelis, the Saudis, the Crown, and the United States, the neocon Zionists, they will be working within Russia, won't they, to try and undermine him. They're always doing it, you know, supporting opposition to him. And there's always the worry that for people that he might eventually back off and he might eventually kind of kowtow to the West and leave Assad high and dry because he might end up fighting his own battles in his own country. I don't see that happening, but I understand why people are worried about it. It's vital he stays the course with Assad, right?
It is. It is vital. He's the leader of the opposition right now. You know, you could have said for a while that, you know, even though people hate the Vatican and I know the Vatican, its history is sordid, but the fact of the matter is the Vatican, up until a little while back when the wall, well, when the wall came down, the Vatican, when the Berlin Wall came down, the Vatican became the de facto, the only de facto opposition to the Illuminati, even though many times through their history, they were infiltrated by these people, especially their bank. But the new Pope, the first act he did was went in and raided that very bank, by the way. And for a while, anyway, the Vatican was the only thing that could stop these people, the Catholic Church. That was the only thing powerful enough with all their faults. And that's why, of course, they had to do Dan Brown and all these phony novelists about, you know, and then they make, you know, the pedophile thing, which is horrible, but it was way overblown compared to the pedophilia, which goes on among these bankers in the City of London crowd, you know, Richie. And they went after the Catholic Church for that reason, you know, and yes, that's horrible what happened there, but it was overblown. It was propaganda. And they went after him. And so it turned people off to Catholic Church. Most people probably still making jokes about it. So they're going to do the same thing with Russia now because the wall is back up a little bit, let's just say, after South Ossetia was retaken in Georgia. That's where it started. After Russia refused to bow down in Ukraine and basically, you know, peeled off half of it and made the Donbass Republic their ally in Crimea, and then now we have Syria. And so, yeah, things, as you can see, you know, the Russians are starting to stand up again. So many of us wished during the Gulf War in 1990 that they had done something. But it was right after, you have to understand, this was right after Yeltsin. This was, you know, and Gorbachev, we don't know. There was a weird mark on his forehead right after he went to the Presidio and this Marine base in San Francisco Bay Area. And that was all of a sudden he starts talking glasnost, perestroika. Well, that sounds really great, doesn't it? What's that mean? Free market, monopoly, capitalism. That's what that means. So he was either chipped or out of something. And then Yeltsin, he was just the IMF puppet. And that's all he was. And he presided over the looting of Russia in 98. So just 2 years after that, the Gulf War happened. Russia wasn't strong enough yet, even though they were already turning back to a more nationalist agenda at that time, they weren't strong enough to stand up to the U.S. and the Brits and the, you know, the coalition of the willing. So it's so good to see them doing that now, because it's all we got. Now, the Vatican's discredited. It's all we got. But the Vatican's kind of making a little comeback here, too, with this new pope. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I just I think in the big, big picture, there's some significant opposition to these people right now. And I think that answers that question earlier about why are they going after people that criticize Zionism, because they really are worried, because they see these big players. They see, you know, they don't worry about the people with the signs in the streets saying resist. They worry about Russia, the Vatican. They do also worry about these G20 black bloc people, because they're militant. And if that catches on, then they have problems, and there's nobody controlling these people. So they have a lot to worry about. And I hope Putin holds the line too, and I'm pretty sure he will, because I think it's becoming sort of ingrained now. My big oil book is, they're just finished translating it. It took forever, but you know, it's a big book and a lot of big words and names, and they're just finishing that. That's going to be coming out in Russian language within the next few months. And also the Turkish government is interesting, and the Turks just took out my big oil book. They're translating it. They're going to put it out in Turkish. It indicates to me that, you know, the Russians, the Turks, these people, I mean, they just have a more real view of what goes on in the world. They know, they saw what happened in 98 very recently. They know there's this Illuminati. They know the bankers. Putin talks also about the metaphysical sort of battle between good and evil. I mean, he's very aware person beyond politics, beyond this stuff. I mean, he's a very, I think, a spiritual person. Which you know, of course, you're not going to get that from the media. But if you hear him talking sometimes, he'll just blow your mind, the stuff he's talking about. So I think it's he represents our best hope in terms of this awareness, because he's part of the awareness, and he's also in just a very powerful position.
Dean,
that's my feeling on it.
It's brilliant stuff. We've got time for a question from a listener. I've got about 2 minutes left. Sorry to press you, but this is a good question. Dean mentioned the economy earlier. Does he think they'll pull the plug on the dollar in the not too distant future, plunging everyone into a kind of a financial panic? 2 minutes to get through that. Is the dollar in jeopardy?
It could be. It's all about debt liquidation right now. I think you know, with this $23 trillion debt, there's a big vote coming up in Congress. They're going to have to lift the limit on the debt ceiling significantly. And there's a really big possibility that this could be a political nightmare, because not enough of the Freedom Caucus, extreme right people are going to go along with this, raising the debt ceiling. And then not enough Democrats are going to go along, because they just want to oppose Trump no matter what. And this could be a big train wreck that actually precipitates it. So it depends how the debt deflation or debt inflation occurs. If it's debt deflation, where they actually really go get into the debt and we take care of it and we face it head on, and assets collapse, because they will, including real estate, stocks, bonds, everything, then it's going to be a big crash, but the dollar probably actually goes up. If it's the other one, where it's inflation and the Fed and tries to inflate it away again, which they've done in the past, then it'll be debt inflation and the dollar will take a crash. Personally, I'm betting right now the dollar will actually get stronger, and we're going to go into a period where, you know, everything, even gold, is going to collapse. You know, this is the final stage when there's a depression. I mean, initially gold goes up, which it's been doing the last, 10 years. But in the end, if they're going to be debt deflation, where you actually, you know, have to deal with it and you're not borrowing anymore, then it's debt deflation. The dollar goes up. All other assets go down.
Folks, you can do a lot worse than subscribe at Left Hook. You can subscribe to Dean's weekly column. Go to hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Dean's about 5 minutes, 5 months since you were last on. Don't leave it be as long as that again, mate. Let's do another one of these later on in the summer. Thanks for doing it.
Really appreciate you having me, Richie.
Your books are brilliant. Dean mentioned Big Oil and Their Bankers in the Persian Gulf, Four Horsemen. I can't recommend that highly enough. Read that a few years ago. It's a must read, folks. Check him out if you haven't before. Dean, thanks, mate. Enjoy the rest of the day, and I'll be closing the programme with a bit of Copperhead Road later on. Thanks a million.
Nice. Thank you.
Legend. Thanks, Dean. The terrific Dean Henderson on the line from Missouri there. Yeah, we've got about 3-4 minutes left in the programme. Close out with a bit of Copperhead Road there. Loads of tweets came in during that. To follow what other people are tweeting to me, simply go to twitter.com, and all you got to do is put Richie Allen Show, all one word, into Twitter. And if you press enter, you'll see what other people have been saying to me during the programme. And there was a lot of conversation about what Elizabeth Johnston, the activist mommy, said to me a little bit earlier on about the article in Teen Vogue, which has caused a lot of upset amongst parents and families in the US, but also here as well. That's nearly it for the programme. Enjoy that. Flew by. Terrific to have Dean back on. And it was nice to meet Elizabeth Johnston for the first time as well. What I would like to do, because I am aware that some of our listeners don't share my opinion on things like transgender agenda and the sexualization of children. I know there are people who listen to the programme who disagree with it. So I'll try and schedule real soon an open mic where we talk about those issues and you get a chance to have a go back at me. I'll be obviously nice and keep my trap shut. And those of you who disagree with my opinions can by all means come on and have a go. Some of our gay and lesbian listeners might want to come on and have a go at me or to say whatever it is they want to say, and we'll facilitate that in the interest of fairness and in the interest of balance as well. I'll be delighted to do that. So let's do that real soon as well. That's pretty much it then. Huge thanks to Elizabeth Johnston and to Dean Henderson. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow for Wednesday's programme, which will be live at 7 p.m, of course, British summertime. In the meantime, do stay in touch with davidicke.com/headlines. David's website, fantastic. The information on the headlines page is vital. David, of course, is going to do three special events later in the year in November in Edinburgh, London and in Manchester to mark the publication of his forthcoming book. I will be at the ones in London and Manchester comparing. I'll be doing a bit of comparing. So the one in Edinburgh is sold out, but there are tickets available for London and Manchester. Go to davidicke.com. And he's doing a new speaking tour next year with evening events, 4-hour events in the evenings, Liverpool being one and many other places as well. Go to davidicke.com. Do stay in touch with fabradiointernational.com as well. Wonderful programming under the wonderful guiding hand of Paul Ripley. Check out fabradiointernational.com. Love Dean Henderson. Can't say that enough. I've known Dean a few years now. So here's a bit of Copperhead Road. Dean was at Steve Earle on Saturday night last. This is for him. Thanks for listening to our programme today. Do look after yourselves and one another. And do sometimes disconnect from the information. There's no harm in that either. No harm in it. Big thanks to Aaron Callan, by the way. Cheers, Aaron. And to Simon for the YouTube videos. Good to have Simon back. See you tomorrow. This is a long goodbye, isn't it? I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, my name's John Lee Pettimore. Same as my daddy and his daddy before. You hardly ever saw granddaddy down here. They only come to town about twice a year. They buy 100 pounds of yeast and some copper line. Everybody knew it made me shine. And I'm a revenue man on a granddaddy bed. Head left a holler of everything had. For my time, but I've been told to never come back from Copperhead Road.